At every elections for the European Parliament, the Directorate General for Communications launches an information campaign for the general public. Each aims at several goals. What are the goals for the elections in 2024? Maybe a better turnout at the polling stations?
Well, that's always very nice to see, of course. Our main interest is to make sure that the level of participation in the elections is as high as possible. Part of that, of course, is the simple turnout level, but it's not. That's not the only story. It's also the interest that is shown, the media coverage, the amount that people are talking about the elections, and the sense that these elections are relevant to people's lives. And what we do with our campaign is to try and prompt interest. We do that indirectly. Of course, we try to prompt interest in the media, and we try to do it directly as well through our contacts with stakeholder groups, with citizens in general. We also have the simple objective of making people aware the elections are actually happening. So there's, you know, the date and all of that kind of thing. That's it. I'd say, you know, we just want to get people interested and participating.
In 2019, the title of the campaign was This Time I'm Voting. In 2014, it was This Time It's Different. Regarding the next elections, what are the key elements of the campaign?
Well, it's probably too early to say. We haven't got that slogan, the equivalent of that slogan at the moment. And that's deliberate because we think we need to be very much taking account of the context at the time of the election. However, we know that at the moment we're talking about what the European Union delivers. We're calling it the delivery phase of the campaign. So we're not going out and talking in terms of a campaign in public at the moment, but we really want to emphasize throughout this year what is actually happening in Europe and what the European Parliament and the European Union in general are doing to change and affect people's lives. And that we're actually using a tagline, which is democracy in action. So this is a phrase that you will see from us quite a lot because that's what it is. We believe this democratic system is producing action. And lots of legislation is actually being adopted in the European Parliament.
Are there any specific topics that the information campaign goes to?
Well, we looked at the things that people are interested in, and we think, for example, there's a lot of legislation going through on climate change related matters, the so-called Fit for 55 agenda, which is a whole series of things that can be about carbon neutrality. It can be about pollution, the environment, lots of things like that. That's part of it. There's obviously a economic growth part of the package as well. There's a lot on the digital agenda, so making technology part of our lives and upping our game when it comes to matters digital, including about artificial intelligence. You've got migration is still a really big subject in Europe at the moment, and this is something which is drawing political dividing lines in Europe, in the European Parliament as well. So now there's plenty of big subjects, and we feel we don't ourselves choose the subjects, but we go with the subjects which are to the fore in the political debate, both in the Parliament and indeed around and across Europe.
Regarding these subjects, these topics, in order to involve citizens more and more in the democratization of European institutions, the Spitzenkandidat process was introduced in 2014. It worked then, but not in 2019. Some saw this as a step backward. I can add that to this the corruption scandals in which the members of the European Parliament were involved in 2022. Is there a communication strategy in addressing these kinds of topics?
Of course, we have to deal with the realities of life in the political world. And, the Spitzenkandidat, so-called the lead candidate process, was something which the political world considered to be a very good idea back in 2014. They went with this idea, which is not firmly embedded in the treaties which govern the way that we do business, but there are good reasons to introduce this process. As you say, in 2014, it went through and actually came to the conclusion of Jean-Claude Juncker at that time becoming the president of the Commission. Now, in 2019, that didn't happen. There were lots of political reasons for that. This was a shame in terms of the narrative, at least, that Parliament wanted to see for the elections. But, you know, political reality is what it is, and it didn't happen that way. That hasn't changed Parliament's mind. It still believes that this process is one that is useful. It helps people understand the election better. It links the outcome of the election more closely to the ultimate formation of the executive of the European Union. And that's why it is still a very good idea. It indeed is something also that the Conference on the Future of Europe, which discussed Europe, wanted to see embedded more firmly in the law. We will see. I mean, we're a communication service. We deal with reality as we find it. We want, you know, on both occasions, in both election campaigns, we wanted to talk about it. And let's not be too negative, because in 2019, although ultimately the choice, the election of the president of the commission did not depend on this process, there was much about the campaign which did. So it was still a way of formatting the campaign to hold debates and to put different political views in front of the public, which was useful. And I think it helped people understand what was at stake in those elections. Now then, to move on to the scandal you mentioned, yep. this clearly is something which is very damaging. When something like this happens, it's very damaging for the institution. It's something which I think anybody who worked for the Parliament felt very acutely disappointed about when the news came out. I also think that when it happened, we saw an extremely powerful reaction from the President of Parliament, and indeed from the Parliament as a whole, to try and deal with the questions that this raised. And, you know, as things stand, we don't know quite how far this is all going to go. It doesn't seem to be spreading much more widely at the moment, as far as we can tell. Of course, we're not party to the inquiry. And the gaps in the rules that this revealed are being handled. And for example, the Parliament only last week took some important decisions about a cooling off period for outgoing members of the European Parliament. They now have a six-month period when they will not be able to act as lobbyists or deal with the Parliament as an outside party. Also, just simply questions like access to the buildings for former members, former staff, and third-party organisations of this sort. So, I mean, it's prompted a reaction, which I think is a very positive thing. That said, we have to overcome still the damage that this has done. One way we do that, and we are trying to do that, is to talk about results. This is a parliament which does actually deliver results. And we will spend the best part of this year talking about that, as I say, democracy in action.
What are the main challenges in reaching with the campaign messages to citizens? The diversity of the public, the fact that there are so many communication channels, the fake news.
Firstly, communicating in a single campaign across Europe is complicated because, of course, it's not a single an audience, if I can put it that way. There are very different cultures across Europe. Obviously, there are different languages across Europe. This is why when we communicate, we try to decentralize a lot of the activities that are part of the campaign. So, for example, although we will have an overall message in the campaign, which is about delivery now and will be about democracy later on, we do that in a language and with a sensibility which is different from place to place. And of course, communicating in Romania is not the same as communicating in Portugal or in Sweden. And therefore, we like to give a lot of leeway to our local people to use the material, to use the messages, as it were, in a different way. And then there's the channels. You mentioned, I know that in Romania, Facebook is still a very big factor in the world of communication. In other countries, that is less so. And there are other networks which are more to the fore. We adapt to that as well. Misinformation is a huge problem. Misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, there's all kinds of words for this now. But all of this that's going on is a challenge to not only to us as communicators, it's a challenge to our entire democratic system. Our feeling is we have to react in different ways. Firstly, we have to be strong as communicators ourselves. So when we have good information, reliable information, we need to be good at getting that across. And that's part of our professional challenge. We also have to try and counter what we might consider to be false narratives or damaging, even malicious narratives that we come across, unfortunately, quite frequently. But I think also we have to rely on a growing ability on the part of the public in general to understand the media, how it works, understand the way that information is coming across, and to be able to spot when someone is playing with their heads, kind of thing. And I'm encouraged, I know this is difficult, but I'm encouraged to see that many young people feel able to distinguish better now than maybe a few years ago between lines that are being spun by someone in order to get them to behave in a way that that third party would like, and real information that they can rely on. I know you have to look at sources, you have to look at where things come from a lot more. And I think that we are becoming accustomed to having to do that. Now, we're a long way off an ideal world when it comes to that. And there is always the inventiveness of people in producing misinformation is quite extraordinary. It's for us to try and be as inventive as well.
Do you see any changes in the public perception about the European elections between 2019 and the next elections in 2024?
We're not there yet, so I don't know yet. But if I can go back a step and look at past elections, I would say that between 2014 and 2019, we saw a very significant change, a very significant increase in turnout, particularly amongst young people. The increase was much larger amongst young people. We got over that important 50% mark in Europe as a whole, which was progress. But obviously, there's more progress that can be made in the future. I think the world is changing in a way that helps people understand that they have to view at least part of their sort of political life at the level of Europe. And that's because of what's going on. If you go back over the last 15 years or so, you know, we've gone from crisis to crisis. We've seen, you know, an economic and financial crisis back in 2008, which had enormous impacts on people's lives. We've seen the migration issue come very much to the fore and being a real sort of battleground of a political battleground inside Europe. We've seen the whole Brexit debate, which came at the same time as Donald Trump's election in the United States. And this placed a lot of question marks over our political system and where we were all going. Then, of course, we had a pandemic and then the war in Ukraine, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So all of these things, and I think it's whatever you think about how they were handled and what happened in all of those cases, you can see that these are things that can only be dealt with at an international level, at a European level. We have these tools to deal with this. And people, when they watch the news, more and more, they're seeing European figures being tackled about these questions. You know, I think it was to see the president of the European Commission on your regular national TV news was a bit of an exception and probably wouldn't have much of an idea who it even was. This was some years ago. And now, Ursula von der Leyen and the president of the parliament, Roberta Metsola, these are fairly familiar faces. People are starting to see that. So in a way, the European dimension is getting closer to people. Whether or not they like it or are critical of it, or they think it's doing a great job, whatever, they understand that it involves them, it concerns them. So I think there, this next election will be affected by that. It will be affected by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is, let's face it, an attack on a way of life, on a European democratic view of the world. Again, there can be areas where people disagree with each other about how we've reacted to that war. But I think on the whole, European reaction has been very solid, very united. And that is something which, again, places this whole idea of democracy and our values and how we want to live and why we want to live that way. It's put all of those issues front and center in people's minds. I mean, I remember, if I can tell a story quickly, years ago, as a young guy working in the parliament, I was having a conversation with a young Danish member of parliament. And she was saying, "Oh, but will you people stop talking about peace? Because young people aren't interested in peace. It's taken for granted. The war was over years and years, decades ago. And now talk about something else." Well, look at the situation now. I think peace, people get, you know, the European Union as a peace project is suddenly relevant again. And although things have maybe, there's a kind of a stalemate in Ukraine right now, we think back a year, we were very concerned across the whole of Europe, and I think rightly so, about where this was going to take us. And it could still take us in all kinds of directions we don't want to go.
Let's go to Romania. Three more electoral polls will take place next year. What particularities will the information campaign have? There is an evaluation of the most important dialogue topics.
Everywhere has the subjects that are on the agenda, nationally speaking. So we have to react to that and show that we understand. So particularly countries in this part of Europe, obviously Ukraine and everything that has flowed from the Ukraine war is particularly close to home. And I think we need to acknowledge that and we need to be discussing those issues. You know, Romania has its own problems and its own advantages, its own cultural factors, all of that we take into account. And that's something we do everywhere we are. In spite of the fact that we do have a general message about Europe and about the values that we all share, I think we have to understand that the way we talk about them are different from place to place. Romania has been a place where we've seen lots of positivity about Europe for a long time. And I understand that now we're in a phase where a few more questions are being asked. I think that's also a healthy part of democracy, that people, they look at the system they live in and they want answers about how it works. And you know, it's for us to be honest about standing up and saying, well, we understand these are problems, we understand and we're willing to talk about them. We're not going to back off and pretend that everything is hunky-dory. No, we are prepared to confront, we're prepared to talk about these things because we are then going to be asking people to vote for what they want to see happen. And I think a political debate and a public debate about those things is really important. Now, you mentioned another factor, which, I mean, is an external factor for us in a way, other elections taking place. This is something which can affect the level of interest.
Helping or...
It's a paradox, actually, because sometimes in some countries, for example, you might have different elections being held on the same day. So you've got a huge contentious presidential election happening the same day as the European elections. You will see very high turnout because everybody is going to vote for the president's one. While they're there, they do the other one. Yeah. But at the same time, you may find that the important debates about Europe get drowned out in a more domestic environment. What we would like to see, and this is still difficult, and it's difficult everywhere in Europe, is the European elections to be fought over European issues and not become a kind of a proxy for national debates on other issues. Now, it's very hard, and it's not even right to try and completely separate these things, but that's what can happen when you have a lot of different elections happening in the same year. So I believe that we're the first to go, as it were, next year, that the European elections are the first of this series of elections, which will maybe in some ways could be an interesting opportunity for us to sort of lead the way. Let's open up political debate, get people thinking about political matters, and perhaps that will be something the politicians from their perspective want to do as well. And at the end of the day, when it comes to elections, the important thing is what the politicians are proposing, offering to their electorates. They're the ones competing ultimately in the election to win it or lose it. Our interest as an institution is to get people interested in the process, wanting to take part in it. But we're not telling people which way to go. Of course, that's not our role at all.
Okay, from the discussions you have with the citizens of the various member states, does it emerge the need of a reform of the electoral system for the European Parliament elections? Same date, for example, yeah. Same regulations for the right to vote in all member states and so on.
I don't want to be ridiculous and suggest that this is the first thing on everyone's minds when you talk to them across Europe, you know, electoral law. It's a minority interest, you might say. But what we saw, for example, in the Conference on the Future of Europe is that when you sit people down and ask them about it, how do you think this process should work? You do get a very clear answer. And people would like to see elections happening at the same time everywhere. And there was a proposal that came out of the Conference on the Future of Europe for the 9th of May, Europe Day to be that day. There are many sort of technical and political obstacles to that happening at the level of national institutions across Europe. So this is not happening at the moment. But who knows, maybe we'll gradually move in that direction, as I say, because people are understanding that the place of Europe in their lives. This is something which will develop over time and perhaps will naturally lead over time to a sort of a coordination, a better sort of harmonization of the elections. You know, I come from a country where elections are always held on Thursdays. Don't ask me why. I'm not sure anybody knows. In other places, it's always on a Sunday. Yep. It's on Sunday in Romania, right? Yep. I think. Yep. You know, things like that. Habits are very difficult to change. Is that the most important thing? Maybe not. There is also this idea of transnational electoral lists. Now, this is, again, an idea that is very much favored by people who believe in the Europeanization of these elections. So, and it goes together with the lead candidate idea, the Spitzenkandidat. It gives more substance to that idea, because if your lead candidate was actually elected at the head of a transnational list, that would give them that much more credibility when they present themselves finally as a candidate for the presidency of the commission. And this would create a closer equivalence to national systems. And maybe that's the way that it will develop over time. Now, this is an idea which is still circulating in amongst circles of people who are interested in this kind of thing. But it is, and it's been there for quite a while, I have to say, but it's gathering momentum. And, you know, Europe, it often works that way. Things bubble under, they're under the surface for quite a while. Then something happens and everyone realizes, no, we have to do this now. And now is maybe not the moment for 2024. I don't know. Don't ask me to predict. But I suspect even technically now it's quite late in the day to make any changes. But maybe we're gradually getting there.
Okay. Thank you for your answers. I need a short answer for the news bulletin. In Iași, you'll have a meeting at the Alexander Ioan Cuza University. With whom and what is the purpose of this meeting?
Essentially, this is a meeting with young people where we can talk about how we prepare for these elections, the European elections, and what we can do together to get our communities, our families, our friends, our networks interested in these elections, and why we should be. So that is going to be about that. It's going to be about essentially about campaigning and how we're in this together. And in fact, this is something that I really want to emphasize tomorrow, is that we have a community that we've created. It's called together.eu. It's for people who want to be and involved. They want to stand up for this idea of democracy at the European level. And it's an opportunity for them to get involved with us as the European Parliament to do something about it.
That's it. Thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.